You are about to enjoy a By Maven Media production. I'm your host, Dr. Kelsey Vick, a board-certified orthopedic doctor of physical therapy and a women's health physical therapist. I'm super happy you're here. Now let's Wellness Girl chat. Today's topic is a bit controversial, but it is an absolute essential in our exercise routines as women. So let's dive in. Welcome back to Wellness Boosts the Pod. I'm your host, Dr. Kelsey Vick, a board-certified orthopedic doctor of physical therapy and a pelvic floor physical therapist. And throughout the month of September, we are going to be diving into a new series, one that just came to me out of nowhere, honestly, after thinking about how judgmental the women's health and exercise and fitness community can be in general, where if you are not team strength training or team Pilates or team yoga, you're wrong. And that's not the case. We all have different styles that we enjoy. And there's a way that we can meet all of the foundations to help us build healthy bodies and reach our goals when it comes to health and wellness, no matter the style of workout or fitness that we like to do. So that inspired me to come up with this concept called the exercise handbag. And it might seem a little bit out there, but we all have purses and handbags, right? We all have certain styles that we might like, whether it's a backpack, whether it's a tote, whether it's more of a clutch or a crossbody or a shoulder bag. But despite the different styles, we all typically have some of the same components in each handbag. We oftentimes have some sort of lip moisturizer. We have sunglasses or glasses. We've got our driver's license, our wallets. We have our cell phone, maybe a charger. So no matter the handbag, no matter the style of handbag that you prefer, a lot of the time, the essentials and the foundations that are inside of those handbags are similar across all of us. The same can totally be said about our exercise routines. You might like Pilates, I might like strength training and running, but we can incorporate some of the foundations that should be a part of every girl's exercise routine in this exercise handbag, no matter the style that we enjoy or that we find ourselves gravitating towards. So to sum it all up, we all have a different style of exercise handbag that we might prefer, but the foundations of what we carry in that bag stay the same, or should stay the same if our goals revolve around toning, building muscle, losing fat, improving metabolism, energy, sleep, and especially if our goals revolve around longevity. So that's where the exercise handbag series fits in, and that's what we'll be going over throughout the month of September. So we'll cover just different pillars of the essentials that should be in each of our exercise handbags. And then we'll dive into how to add that essential into your routine, no matter the style of exercise or the style of movement that you like. My goal is to also decrease judgment with this series because there are so many black and white things in the fitness realm where it's, if you're not doing this, you're wrong. If you're only doing this, you're wrong. There's so much fear surrounding what exercise is right for my body. And I get asked all the time about what style is right for me. How do I know what exercises are right for my body? So my hope is that this series helps to clear the air a little bit, give yourself a little bit of grace, no matter what style of exercise you enjoy, and realize that you can include some of these essentials in your routine, in your exercise handbag, no matter if you prefer Pilates or running or swimming or bar or cycling or dance or any form of movement. So the first foundation we'll talk about is definitely one of the most controversial, which is why I wanted to start out with it. And it's also an email that I got from a women's health researcher and scientist recently that really inspired this series. It's Dr. Stacey Sims, and I've mentioned her on the podcast a few times, but she is really one of the researchers at the forefront of researching women's health specifically throughout the lifespan compared to men. Because a lot of the time, the typical exercise recommendations are based on the male body. And how we understand the human body, a lot of the time, goes back to research that has been done on men. And so she's at the forefront of researching it for a woman's body, which is why I was so intrigued when her email hit my inbox. And she just explained this concept in such a wonderful way that it inspired this entire series. And we are definitely going to start out talking about one of the most controversial pillars, one of the most controversial essentials to have in your exercise handbag as a woman. And I'm sure you've already guessed it by now based on the title, but we'll talk about high intensity interval training and sprint interval training. So HIIT and SIIT, both similar where we're exercising at almost maximal level with a little bit of a rest break. But a lot of the time, HIIT and SITs get a bad reputation because of elevation of our cortisol. So we'll dive into all of that too. Let's start off with some simple definitions. So high intensity interval training is HIIT and sprint interval training is SIT. So HIIT involves short bursts of activity, typically 45 seconds to a few minutes at 85 to 90% of your heart rate max or 85 to 90% effort, followed by usually a 1-to-1 work to recovery ratio. So if you do the exercise for a minute, you're also recovering for a minute, but that can vary, but that's just a general rule of thumb. And as a side note, a way to calculate that max heart rate, if you really want to be a little bit more objective with it, a simple calculation is 220 minus your age. So 220, if you're 20 years old, minus 20 is going to be 200 beats per minute. That's going to be 100% of your max heart rate. And then you just take 85 to 90% of that. And there's going to be some fluctuations, but that's a good estimation if you do want to get a little bit more objective with those measurements. So for sprint interval training, it's a shorter duration at 100% max effort. So again, if you're 20 years old, 200 beats per minute is where you're going to shoot for that heart rate range, but basically max effort for 20 to 30 seconds, followed by a longer recovery, like 2 to 4 minutes in between. So why do high intensity interval training and sprint interval training get a bad reputation? I think it comes down to cortisol. There's been a big push around cortisol, I guess, propaganda, and we've done an entire series deep diving into cortisol and why it's a misunderstood mean girl. So I'll leave that link below to all of those episodes. I think we did 3 or 4 where we truly dove into why you should not be scared of cortisol, why cortisol is actually present within our bodies, what we want to get out of cortisol elevation, how we can help control our cortisol, how we can make sure we're not in a chronically elevated state with our cortisol. So we covered all the science behind it. I'll leave that link below. But I think that's why high intensity interval training and sprint interval training get a bad reputation. Cortisol is truly that misunderstood mean girl. We need it within our bodies, especially to build muscle. We also need it in order to have energy throughout the day. We need it to exercise. We want it to elevate during exercise, which I think is why HIIT and SIT have this sort of negative connotation. However, with high intensity interval training and sprint interval training, what we expect and what we want with our bodies is a momentary spike in cortisol, a momentary cortisol elevation during that exercise, followed by our bodies being able to return to baseline. We do not want sustained cortisol elevation, but if we do the appropriate things surrounding high intensity interval training and surrounding sprint interval training, including a proper cool down, proper breath work, we should be able to help control that cortisol elevation that naturally happens and we want to happen with exercise. So if you're concerned about your cortisol levels with high intensity interval training or with sprint interval training, I highly recommend a cool down, especially breathwork focused. Breathwork allows us to cue into that parasympathetic rest digest nervous system, which helps our cortisol return back to baseline after exercise. Over time, high intensity interval training and sprint interval training have also actually been shown to lower that baseline level of cortisol. So not within one session, we expect a spike within each exercise session, but over time, the more we incorporate HIIT and SIT into our routines, the better our body adapts and it's actually beneficial to our cortisol long-term. In addition to the essentials in my exercise handbag, I also like to have foundational supplements. It can be hard to know who to trust, which is why I always recommend Thorne. I have pointed so many people towards their creatine because they go through the extra time, money, and energy to get it NSF certified for sport, the gold standard certification recommended by many of the dietitians and scientists we've had here on the pod. Check out the link below to support the pod and message me for 30% off your entire Thorne order. Now let's get back to the pod. So why are high intensity interval training and sprint interval training so important to have as part of our essentials in our exercise handbags, especially as women? A lot of it comes down to our skeletal muscle and our mitochondrial density. As women, we naturally have more type 1 skeletal muscle tissue fibers compared to men. And these type 1 fibers are built more for low load, long duration work. So think long runs. Your type 1 skeletal muscle fibers are the ones that help with your postural muscles and standing up without falling over. With our posture, you're having to hold a position, low load, low weight for a long period of time. So these are where those type 1 skeletal muscle fibers come into play. Men, on the other hand, have more type 2A and type 2X fibers, which are known for these fast, explosive, power-based movements. So think sprinting, jumping, those like really quick bouts of effort. Those are what those type 2 skeletal muscle fibers are utilized for, and the ones that men have proportionally more of compared to women. So as we all age, men and women, our skeletal muscle fibers start to shift to have more type 1 muscle fibers compared to type 2. And it's really important that as we age, we try and maintain those type 2 skeletal muscle fibers because they help us with catching ourselves if we're about to fall, standing up out of a chair, which you don't necessarily think of those as power-based activities now, but we need that quick reaction time in order to help ourselves if we start to trip over a rug or in order to get out of a chair, especially as we age. So as women, we also have a higher mitochondrial density than men, meaning we are naturally shifted to be able to handle more endurance-based exercises better than men. Because we naturally have more type 1 skeletal muscle fibers and we have a higher mitochondrial density, we need to work what we're not as good at, if that makes sense. So structurally and physiologically, we have a predisposition towards more of those endurance-based activities. So we really need to work on the opposite. So that high intensity, that sprint intensity training in order to help maintain and increase some of those type 2 fibers and then also maintain those fibers as we age, in addition to working more of that anaerobic system within our bodies that doesn't necessarily need oxygen in order to power certain movements. Since we do have such a high capacity for using oxygen for our movements with that increased mitochondrial density. I know that's a ton of science, but basically we are shifted more towards those endurance-based exercises. We're going to be better at those in general across the board compared to our male counterparts. And this is not saying you put our top marathon runner against the men's top marathon runner. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying as a massive generalization, when comparing biological sex, men have more type 2 fibers compared to women are typically built more for those power explosive based movements, where women are shifted more towards those type 1 fibers, those more endurance based exercises. So since we are shifted that way, we want to be able to train the opposite, not only for the health of our bodies currently, but also long term. So it boils down to if we don't use it, we lose it. And when we don't have it as much as a guy does, we definitely want to train that system even more. So sprinting itself also helps a wide variety of our systems. So it helps our bones, of course, our muscle tissue, our joints, our nervous system, our mental health, our mood. It covers a wide range of benefits within our system. So it's not just that we want to train the opposite. It also provides a lot of benefits in a short period of time compared to those endurance-based exercises. So high intensity interval training and sprint interval training improve our VO2 maxes, which is one of the prime measurements for how well our body is able to utilize the oxygen that is in our system. It's also overall a prime measurement of how healthy our heart is. High intensity interval training and sprint interval training also help to increase our stroke volume, which basically means it helps create a more efficient heart. I mentioned the other day when talking about my own training that my heart rate is decreasing. With purposeful training, I've gotten my heart rate to lower, but how am I able to pump the same amount of oxygen that my body needs with a lower beats per minute? That comes down to stroke volume. So my heart is better able to pump more blood out with each beat, which is why it has a lower heart rate, because it can get the same cardiac output at a lower heart rate compared to previously when there was a little bit of a higher heart rate and less blood pumped out per beat compared to right now. So it all comes down to stroke volume and how much blood is actually pumped out per each beat of the heart. HIIT and SIIT also help improve our overall metabolism and our ability to utilize blood glucose. They help at recruiting, of course, those often forgotten fast twitch fibers that as we age, we especially don't train as much. It helps us protect against falls as we age and helps protect our lean muscle mass and our bone mineral density, which again, super duper important as women because we are at an increased risk for osteopenia, osteoporosis, and sarcopenia, which are basically the terms used for weaker and fragile bones and a loss of muscle mass. HIIT and SIIT also help improve our brain. So it improves our overall executive functioning and our ability to carry out a plan. It improves our mood and mental health overall. It protects against Alzheimer's. hours, which I found this interesting in my research, but HIIT specifically increases BDNF, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factors that support mood, neuroplasticity, and overall health. So super cool that something that affects our musculoskeletal system and our cardiovascular system in such a short period of time also helps our brain health. It also improves working memory and attention, even after just one session. So if you have a super hard day at work, it might be worth it to do a session of HIIT or sprint interval training before in order to help your focus throughout the rest of the day. It also improves symptoms of anxiety and depression, and it helps preserve certain brain structures like the hippocampus that start to lose some of their volume as we age. So I know that was a long list of how HIIT and SIT help our bodies, but I hope it just goes to show how important it is and really how time efficient it is. 20 to 30 seconds of work or 2 minutes of work or 45 seconds of work with a little bit of rest, like it's very quick, very time efficient for all of those benefits. So hopefully that's even more motivating to add it to your routine and add it to your exercise handbag because of how time efficient it is. So how should you add it to your week? For high intensity interval training, again, it's about 2 minutes of work at 85 to 90% of your max heart rate or 85 to 90% effort, followed by 2 minutes of recovery. And you can repeat that about 5 times as a typical session. For sprint interval training, now we're talking more 30 seconds of all out 100% effort, 100% max heart rate, followed by 3 to 4 minutes of rest, repeated about 5 times. So some of the keys to sprint interval training and HIIT interval training, make sure you warm up. As a physical therapist, I know this is so annoying to hear, but warm-ups are super important. For both high intensity interval training and sprint interval training, we're asking our muscles, our joints, our tendons, our ligaments to all respond to a relatively quick high velocity movement within a very short period of time. There's hardly any sort of like buildup time, right? Especially our muscles, they're expected to be contracting super quickly at max intensity. So it's really important to incorporate a warm up, especially to protect against injury. And then of course the cool down, because people are so concerned about cortisol elevation, a great thing to help combat this is proper breath work and a proper cool down to help cue that nervous system into that parasympathetic rest, digest, muscle recovery state, cortisol lowering state, so that you can get the benefits of HIIT without this sustained chronic cortisol elevation. And remember, HIIT and SIT incorporated over a longer time as part of your exercise routine really does help to lower that baseline level of cortisol within your body. And then as far as times per week, about 2 to 4 times per week on non-consecutive days. So make sure to give your body time to rest and recover from that sprint interval training or that high intensity interval training in between your sessions. Now let's add a little bit of flair, because I know not everyone is like me and loves hill sprints. That's how I've been incorporating it. But I know some of you guys enjoy Pilates. Some of you guys enjoy bar or sculpt classes. So here are some ways that you can incorporate high intensity interval training or sprint interval training into your routine, no matter the style of exercise that you prefer. So I mentioned I love hill sprints. You can also do an interval run or swimming intervals, cycling intervals. And I usually combine this because it is a shorter workout with an upper body strength day. If you enjoy the gym, you can do a rower, a treadmill, a ski erg, something to basically do max effort on some of the cardio equipment for a short period of time, followed by recovery, whether that's a walk around the gym, whether that's just a slower pace on the bike or on the treadmill. If you're an at-home workouter, you can definitely jog outside, but as far as inside goes, you can do squat jumps, high knees, jump lunges, jumping jacks, burpees, all of those sort of body weight, higher intensity movements at home. If you like sculpt classes, at the end of the class, try adding in a few short bursts of jumps or of those same cardio exercises, jump lunges, or you can also do squat jumps, something to basically get that effort at 85 to 100%, depending on if you're trying to target more of that high intensity interval training or sprint interval training. And then for my Pilates girls, the reformer is great because you can do those jumps on the jump board. That's a great way to incorporate high intensity interval training or sprint interval training. And if you can do that possibly before a session or after a session, that would be great. That is one way to get your Pilates based workout, but also get that high intensity interval training and sprint interval training in that should be an essential component of your exercise handbag. So I guess that's like a what's in my bag exercise handbag edition. The first thing, maybe this will be the sunglasses or the headphones or the cell phone that we all have in our handbags, but high intensity interval training, sprint interval training, definitely something to not be scared of as a woman. Definitely something that is super important no matter your age. It's very good for us, especially as we start pushing that perimenopause, menopause, postmenopausal age. So it does not matter the age that you are. It's so beneficial for us as women throughout the lifespan and should definitely be an essential part of your own exercise handbag. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you learned a lot and are hopefully a little bit less scared of interval training or understand it a little bit more and how it helps our bodies from a deeper perspective, physiologically, musculoskeletally, neurologically, all of the benefits that come from high intensity interval training and sprint interval training. And then of course, ways that you can incorporate it into your routine, no matter the style of exercise handbag that you prefer. So I hope you enjoy this episode. I'll see you guys again on the next episode of Wellness Fixes the Pod, where we'll cover probably the most forgotten part of the exercise handbag. So I'm excited to dive in and I'll see you then.